All right, we are live for a midweek RTD Q&A, and I'm excited to have a returning guest, Mr. Michael Snyder, an author, blogger, and just overwhelmingly popular individual when it comes to sharing his thoughts and opinions in the blogging space in particular. So, Michael, welcome back to RTD.
Well, thank you for having me back on. It's been quite a while since I was last on with you. So much has changed since then. And I think we're going to have definitely a lot to talk about today.
Definitely. I would agree with that. And so I'm excited to have you back. And so just for the audience's sake, I'll share with them, as I mentioned before we went live, just how, you know, so when we spoke last time, it was in 2015, and it was in regards to your book there, The Beginning of the End. And a lot of things have changed since then. I think, as I mentioned, we were probably on one of the, I think it was QE2 or something like that, and we asked whether or not they were going to taper, but yet we saw the results of that. Not much of any type of taper from that point on, but here we are now. 2021, lots happened since then. So for those that may not know much about you, just give us some of your background and things like that, and then we'll jump into a lot of questions, my friend.
Sure. If you go back over a decade ago, I was an attorney. I was working in Washington, D.C. And if you think you're going to impact the world, well, Washington, D.C. is a great place to do that. Well, God took me out of there. Now, today, me and my wife, we live in the mountains in an undisclosed location in the Northwest, kind of in the middle of nowhere, but from this location, impacting the entire world, where I've got three major websites, the Economic Collapse blog.com, endoftheamericandream.com, and the most important news.com. And those websites have been viewed more than 100 million times over the years. But then my articles are actually read far more off of my websites because they're republished on sites like Zero Hedge and so many others where they're read countless more times. And so that's the primary way that my work impacts the world. And then you showed the picture from the first interview we did. That was my first book, The Beginning of the End. Now I'm on my sixth book, and we're going to talk some about that today. Yeah. 7-Year Apocalypse just came out. It's all about Bible prophecy and end times and things. And people are wanting some answers right now because it literally seems like the world's going crazy, you know, where we've got, you know, the fall of Afghanistan, we've got the crisis on the southern border, you know, we've got, you know, the Biden administration is just kind of, you know, with the tyranny, with the mandates, and we've got COVID, we've got the pandemic, and then economically, we've got rampant inflation, we've got shortages, we've got, people, the most epic worker shortage the world has ever seen, and we should definitely talk about that today. Let me talk about that, because that's one of the biggest puzzles economists have ever seen, because all of a sudden, not just in the United States, but all over the world, we've got this epic shortage of workers, and the talking heads on television and the mainstream media don't know how to explain it.
Right. Very true. That's true. So let's dive right in. So as I mentioned, because I actually informed the audience a couple weeks ago about having you on the show. And so I've had a chance to start, and that didn't get all the way through, trying to read too much at one time. But The 7-Year Apocalypse, and as I mentioned beforehand on the show here, we started off just talking about monetary financial events and stuff like that, but it's no way I could not touch the spiritual side of things, because I think that's ultimately the most important aspect of everything we do. It's, you know, where we're at now and where we're heading. And so the 7-Year Apocalypse, let's just jump right into that. What inspired that book? Give us some of the insights, and then we'll of course just jump on from there.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people know me for my writing about the economy and so forth, but I've been actually studying Bible prophecy since I was, you know, 10 years old and read The Late Great Planet Earth by Hal Lindsey, you know, and that just fascinated me. And I've had a lifelong fascination and interest on Bible prophecy. And I've been on some of the biggest Bible prophecy television shows and radio programs all across America over the years. And over the years, I've also written a few books about Bible prophecy, because I believe, and of course, so many others believe, that we are literally moving into the times and moving toward the time that the Bible describes as what conditions will be like just before the return of Jesus Christ to this planet. You know, and basically, all of human history has been moving up to a great crescendo. And we get to be alive for it. We get to be here for it. A lot of people think about, oh, last days, end times, terrible things are going to happen. And yeah, a lot of bad things are going to happen. A lot of things have already started to happen. A lot of things that I've been talking about in my books have now literally are starting to happen right in front of our eyes. and a lot more bad things are going to happen. But also during this period of time, God is going to be moving in some amazing ways. And if you know God and you understand his plan and you embrace his plan, well, this is such an exciting time to be alive. You know, a lot of people say, Michael, you're right about such hard things. You must be down. You must be depressed. But I'm not depressed at all. You know, I'm not on any pills. I'm not down. I'm not depressed. I'm not seeing a psychiatrist. In fact, I'm a very happy, positive person, and there's no other time in all of human history that I would have rather been alive than right here, right now. So I'm very optimistic, very much looking forward to the future, even though it's going to be more chaotic than most people would dare to imagine right now. But this book, 7-Year Apocalypse, which I wrote, it was kind of sparked by this experience that I had last October, night after night, I started having the same very powerful, very vivid dream, very, very vivid experience while I was asleep. And it was the same thing every single night. And every night in this experience, I was in a major U.S. city. So it wasn't where I'm living now. But I was living in a house, and I would go to the front door of the house, and I would open the door, and I would look down. And I would see just blood everywhere, blood completely covering the doorstep in front of the house. And I from there, it just kept going and going as far as the eye could see. So there was just blood everywhere. But the focus in terms of the experience was on the doorstep. Mm-hmm. And at first, I didn't tell anybody about this, but then I had it, you know, kept having it night after night after night after night. And then finally, in the final night, I had the dream. The same thing happened, but it was in the context of a larger dream where I was, on a radio host, and I was talking about this experience on the radio. So I was broadcasting it. I took that as a sign that I needed to broadcast or share it with the world. So that's what I did. And then once I did that, then the dream stopped. So I took that as a sign I did what I needed to do. But a lot of people have asked me, well, do you know what city you were in? I don't know what city I was in. And like I said, I didn't see how far the blood went, but the focus was on the doorstep. And so at first I didn't know what it meant. Obviously blood is a sign that could mean death or war or destruction or something alarming. And so I kind of had some thoughts about that, but I didn't know in particular, I was alarmed because I was, well, what does this mean? Is it something for me and my family? Well, the blood was never on me. And in the experience, I understood that it didn't refer to me or my family. But what else could it have meant? And so I started watching for what it could mean. And so moving forward, of course, we had the election and then the aftermath there. And there was some, we had January 6th, and there were protests around the country where there was some, a little bit of bloodshed, but I didn't think that was what it was all about. Mm-hmm. And shortly after that, we also had the biggest spike in COVID cases that we had seen so far. And then the vaccine came and all that. And certainly we've seen a lot of death, mm-hmm. and a lot of bad things because of that. But I don't think that was what it was about either. Ultimately, what I think it was about, and it was about this book that God had put on my heart, where I believe that ultimately everything we're going through now, ultimately everything we're experiencing is leading up to something. And it's not just the collapse of the United States, it's just not the collapse of the economy, but literally we're moving into this period that the Bible describes, a 7-year period before ultimately Jesus comes back to this planet, sets everything right and rules for 1,000 years. But before that, there's a 7-year period. It's gonna be the worst period of time in all of human history. Jesus warned us in Matthew 24, there's never been a time like it before. There's never going to be a time like it again. And ultimately, during this time, the Bible describes it as a period of time of immense death and destruction. In fact, I believe the vast majority of the people that are living today will enter the 7-year apocalypse. And I also believe that the vast majority of the people that are alive, that are living today, are going to die during the 7-year apocalypse. And I'm not saying that just to be graphic or, mm-hmm. Or just to get attention, but literally, I believe this is the period of time that we're moving into. So for a lot of people, that in terms of what they're looking for in terms of their future, it's going to be a lot shorter than perhaps they anticipated. But things are starting to get crazy out there. People are wanting answers, and people need to understand the Bible has answers for us. In fact, the Bible has been warning us for nearly 2,000 years that these are times are coming. And God didn't warn us so that we would be afraid, but so that we wouldn't be afraid, so that we would turn to him and realize mm-hmm. that he's in control. He knew about all this in advance, and he has a plan.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that is exciting for those that are awake and aware and actually know how things will unfold. But then for the average person that's going about living their lives, they're not really concerned with the spiritual side of things, just because, especially here in America, we've been so blessed and so privileged to have had the reserve currency up until this point here. But things are changing rapidly. And therefore, that's why I really talked about, you know, what I try to talk about more of is the fact that, you know, your number one asset that you can have at this current time is your faith. And of course, being able to define down what that faith is and then be able to defend it, because we're witnessing persecution across the world in regards to the Christian faith at that. But then the number one commodity that is at the foundation of all this happens to be the human soul. And so there's a spiritual warfare going on right now, and a lot of people, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on how the 7-year apocalyptic timeframe might also play into the Great Reset agenda, because there's a lot of, you know, thoughts about how this current mandated jab stuff will play into the possible loss of lives in the days ahead. And so I think it's the spiritual essence of things far outweighs any of the financial or any of the other things, because you can't take that stuff with you. So I really feel led to focus on trying to get this type of information that you're sharing out to people, because these are conversations that we need to have, I think. And not many people that I know in this space are willing to talk about these things, but curious to get your thoughts on how the current events might play into the possible 7-year time frame that we're expecting to come in the future. Because you said we're currently experiencing some of those things now, perhaps, or what?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, in this book, and then also in this book and my previous book, Lost Prophecies of the Future of America, I talk about inflation. I talk about shortages. I talk about hyperinflation. We're starting to move into that. In fact, you know, just since I've written these books, well, what have we seen? We've seen the U.S. government, and we've seen the Federal Reserve, and we've seen governments and central banks around the world borrow money like crazy, spend the money like crazy, print money like crazy, flood the systems with unprecedented money in response to the COVID pandemic. But what this is causing is just tremendous inflation. In fact, the UN just came out and said the global price of food has increased by 32% just over the last 12 months. Mm-hmm. And now we can still handle it when we go to the grocery store. Well, man, it's more painful, but none of us are starving yet. But on the other side of the world, we've read that millions and millions and millions more people have been pushed into hunger over the past 12 months because they can't afford to buy enough food anymore. So, you know, it's affecting those at the lowest end of the economic food chain first. But in my last two books, I talk about how eventually we're going to see widespread global starvation. We're going to see hyperinflation, and we're moving into that now. The value of the U.S. dollar is being destroyed, systematically destroyed. In fact, just today, there was a headline, Drudge Report, heating costs. The government says your heating costs could be up 54% this winter. We've got a massive energy crisis erupting all over the globe. The country of Lebanon was just plunged into the dark for about 24 hours. Mm-hmm. In China, you know, they're now shutting down factories and shutting down certain areas for certain times or certain days because they don't have enough coal. They don't have enough energy. We're seeing in Europe, the price of natural gas is going absolutely crazy, and they're having problems with that there. We're seeing the price of oil go up. We're seeing the price of gasoline here in the United States start to shoot up really aggressively. Mm-hmm. All this, a global energy crisis is emerging. And what that's going to do now is it's going to make it more expensive to ship things, which has already, you know, been getting more expensive. And that's just going to drive up prices even more. So people need to understand we've entered a very highly inflationary period. And what central banks and governments around the world should be doing is saying, hey, we got to get this under control. We're insane. What we're doing is crazy. Mm-hmm. But instead, Biden wants to spend more. He's like, oh, we got to have this $3.5 trillion bill. We've got to do this. We've got to do that. And so I mean, literally, that they got us on a road to financial Armageddon, but they just keep doing it. They can't help themselves. They got to print more. They got to borrow more. They've got to spend more because that's all they know how to do. And then in the future, every single crisis that comes along, is their only answer is, oh, spend more money, more programs, more government intervention. And so ultimately, all this is leading us someplace really, really bad. Yeah. And so if people think inflation is bad now, just wait until later. But all this, I warned about this in my last two books. Now it's developing. Now we're heading into it. So it's coming. You know, another thing that we're watching out for, obviously, are the shortages. Mm-hmm. Where just yesterday, the White House came out and openly admitted, hey, look, there's going to be shortages for Christmas. There's going to be some stuff that you want to buy. It's not going to be there. This is literally coming from the White House, which normally wants to spin everything, trying to make it so positive. But even now they're saying, hey, we have shortages and it's a real big deal. In fact, Biden just today gave an address on it. And so this is we're seeing widespread shortages, the worst shortages that I've ever seen in my entire lifetime. I'm 51 years old now. Mm-hmm. And they're getting really bad.
Yeah. Now, another question would be, so once again, most of the news that comes out of the White House, as you mentioned, is typically more positive. Politicians have a way with words on trying to promote what I would consider, you know, the true misinformation. But now that they're playing along with all this fear, and so none of this is by coincidence. To me, it's all intentional, like the supply bottlenecks and all the words they're using. There's ships parked off the port. You do a good job of writing about stuff like that. And so a lot of people say it's the regulatory side of things and then, of course, the health side of things. So there's so many different reasons why they're not allowing those containers to drop off their loads and disperse goods, because the goods should be available. Am I correct? Or is this a part of a much greater plan, in your opinion?
Well, there's certainly, you know, I think there's a very insidious agenda going on behind the scenes. And of course, anything like this pandemic that comes along, they're going to use to further their agenda. You know, there's been so much talk about the Great Reset over the past year, and they want to use this pandemic to move it forward and reshape the world in the image that they want. And so we're seeing the rise of authoritarianism all over the globe. We're seeing, you know, and they're seeing how far they can push it, particularly with some of these vaccine mandates where, you know, on a very basic level, they're telling us our bodies are not our own anymore. You mm-hmm. either get this vaccine or in a lot of cases, you're not going to be able to work. If, for example, if you're a healthcare worker and Biden's mandates cover every institution that takes Medicaid and or Medicare, which is mm-hmm. basically every hospital, every major healthcare provider. And so they're saying, hey, look, you spent so much time and money and energy training to become a doctor or a nurse or a medical professional. Well, either you obey and you submit to these mandates or you're gone. Your career is over. Same thing with the military. There's hundreds of thousands of service members that haven't taken the jab. They're saying, okay, you do this or you're gone. You're out of the military. The Biden's mandates are ultimately going to cover any company that employs at least 100 individuals. And, you know, they're saying that could apply to 90, maybe 100 million Americans. So, I mean, you know, this is just another way that they're wanting to push us to the fringes of society. Those that are independent thinkers that don't want to comply, that don't want to be obedient little sheep for their system, their new Great Reset, their new world order, whatever you want to call it. But this is the perfect excuse for them to single us out. They're like, mm-hmm. I think they've realized, hey, we can really identify who the troublemakers are. We can identify those that aren't going to be good citizens of the system we want to set up. All we have to do is, in the name of health, in the name of for your own good, institute these mandates. And the people who rebel, well, those are the people we want to get out of the big companies. These are the people that we want to, you know, get out of the military. These are the people we want to get out of government jobs. These are the people we want to push the fringes of society. And then we're going to set up many countries around the world. They're setting up these vaccine passports. So you're not going to be able to go to restaurants or to the gym or in some cases even to the supermarket to buy food. Right. You know, not going to be able to buy or sell unless you do what they tell you to do. And so ultimately, this is ultimately setting the stage for the kind of authoritarian system that we'll see during the 7-year apocalypse. We're not there yet, but it's certainly setting the stage for it moving in that direction. So very, very alarmed. And ultimately, we're seeing a struggle for freedom all over the globe. We've seen massive massive wild protests from Sydney, Australia, to Rome, to Toronto, Canada, to, you know, of course, here in the United States, literally all over the planet, where people are pushing back, rebelling, fighting for freedom. Yet people on the left and the right from across the political spectrum, they just want to be able to live their lives. They just want to make decisions about what goes into their own body. Because ultimately, if the government can come along and say they want to put something in your body that you don't want there, well, to me, that's uncomfortably close to physical rape.
Very true. And speaking of which, I saw a comment. Of course, I'm going to take some questions from you guys out there paying attention. Appreciate you guys for joining us this evening. And so somebody said, no jab, no job. And so we're witnessing a complete authoritarian style takeover based upon what's happening in Australia right now with, you know, the sectioning certain provinces off, checkpoints here, even apps where they're talking about you got to do is take a selfie and reply back within 5 minutes or else. So we're witnessing what looks like the use of technology as well as the evil agenda at play unfold in Australia. In your opinion, I think there's several reasons why it hasn't happened here in America yet. A, we still have the ability to speak freely and we still are able to arm ourselves, protect ourselves. But do you see that style approach to what's happening in Australia making its way here to the U.S. in this next, you know, couple months or years? Or is there a chance for the American people to push back and say enough's enough? We don't want this. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, yeah, Australia, places like Australia and New Zealand are certainly farther along. But what Joe Biden has done with his vaccine mandate he announced and some of the other things they're doing, and we're seeing really strict mandates in places like New York and Los Angeles, they're pushing, seeing how far they can push the envelope. Mm-hmm. They're seeing how the public's going to respond. So we need people to stand up and take a stand, like the brave pilots from Southwest Airlines, which said, hey, enough is enough. We're going to call in sick. We're going to throw the nation's air traffic into turmoil over, and that was just last weekend. So, you know, we're seeing this pushback. We're seeing people stand up, and we've got to do it because, you know, if they succeed in this, and they're never going to be satisfied, they're just going to push it farther and farther and farther. And what's happening is this push toward authoritarianism, all these travel restrictions, the vaccine passports, all the rules about international travel. It's messing with shipping worldwide. It's messing with exporting and importing. And that's a big reason for the shortages that we're experiencing now. And then also, you know, these different mandates, the vaccine mandates or so forth, have made some of the shortages. We don't have enough truck drivers. We're constantly hearing we don't have enough truck drivers. We don't have enough people to unload at the ports. Mm-hmm. We don't have enough people to stock the shelves. And then last month, we just learned an all-time record high, more than 4 million Americans quit their jobs. You know, and they're saying, oh, you know, it's because people feel like they can go out and get a new job or whatever. But they didn't, the mainstream media didn't say anything about the vaccine mandates and a lot of these rules that are coming into different companies. But I think that played a huge role in it. And so right now you've got companies all over America, and it's not all over America, but literally all over the globe, an epic worker shortage, or even over in Thailand. They're so short of workers, they had to call out the army to help with the rice harvest. You know, we're being told they have a worker shortage in India, which is crazy. Here in the United States, we've still got 5 million less people working than we did than just before the pandemic. Yeah. So if it's just the people that were working before the pandemic, not even talking about theoretical population growth or anything of that nature, but just the people who are working, if they went back to work, well, we'd have 5 million more people working, but we don't. But meanwhile, companies are raising wages like crazy. They're saying, hey, we're going to give you a signing bonus. We're not even going to test for marijuana or other drugs. They're trying to do whatever they can. We're going to pay for your education. They're trying to do whatever they can to get workers to come in they can't find enough workers. We've never seen, it's weird, you know, before the pandemic and all of history, we've never been able to solve the problem of unemployment. But now the pandemic comes along and all of a sudden we've permanently solved unemployment. And now we have worker shortages all over the globe. It doesn't make sense that all of a sudden worldwide, we don't have enough people to do the jobs that need to be done unless millions upon millions of people somehow vanished from the system. Somehow millions and millions of people became unable to work, unwilling to work, incapacitated somehow. It's an incredible mystery why we have, now here in the United States, we seemingly have millions of missing workers. Then over the around the globe, tens of millions of workers that should be there aren't there. Yeah. It's a very strange mystery.
Yeah, I do agree. And so that plays into my theory of like, you know, are we being, of course we're being lied to, but even just the recent unemployment numbers, apparently, you know, it's at a relatively an all-time low type of thing in the midst of all these people being absent from the workforce. But my question would then be, where do they go? Because as of now, all the unemployment stuff has stopped. So they're no longer being compensated for sitting around, to my knowledge. So are they doing something else or what? But yet a lot of the people are no longer counted, as you mentioned. So they're just out here in Rome and in no land. And then also you factor in, because of all the new ways of profiting off of this transition, we have all the people speculating in new types of asset classes, and everybody's now a Forex trader. Everybody's a stock trader. So a lot of people are, I'm assuming, are doing good enough to where they're able to maintain themselves. But I'm curious to get your thoughts on. So we have technology, as I just mentioned, and no jab, no job. And so like the mark of the beast, I want to get back to that a little bit. You know, that's one of the things where you won't be able to buy, sell, or do any type of activity in the economy. We're nowhere near that, in my opinion. But does this CBDC style approach with a one day an app coming at some point that will allow you, will allow them to shut off your access to goods and services? Is that kind of like the start, you think, having, you know, a programmable new currency that's coming? Is that something that will eventually play into the mark of the beast, just revealed in Revelations, or what's your thoughts?
Yeah, in the book of Revelation, we're told that ultimately there's going to be a system someday where you can't buy, you can't sell without the mark of the beast. And so, like you said, we're not there yet, but we're certainly setting the stage for it. And that's one of the things that's so alarming about these vaccine passports, where all of a sudden, in some areas of the world, in certain places here in the United States, you've got to show that you've been vaccinated in order to have access to a sporting event, which, you know, you want to go to a football game in certain areas. I mean, to me, that's absolutely insane. It's crazy, but it's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, in other parts of the world, it's even stricter. You want to go to the grocery store, you got to show your vaccine passport. And so I've never seen them want something as badly as they want people to get this vaccine. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're making an all-out push for it. And now just today I was reading how, you know, the United Nations and you know, they're saying, well, you know, what we really need to do is standardize all this. We need a global vaccine passport, which would be another huge step in the direction of a global system. But it's very, very alarming because, you know, from now on, are they going to be saying, hey, whenever you want to do something in public, oh, your papers, please. I want to see your papers. I want to see your passport. I want to see, you know, your app, whatever it is. To me, it's dystopian, it's authoritarian, and it's extremely alarming. So it's greatly upsetting to me. I'm so glad that people around the world are standing up against this, because mm-hmm. this is total tyranny. But this is where the social engineers want to take us.
Yeah. Yeah, I do agree. And so also while we're speaking, I want to acknowledge a super chat here. It says, hashtag Dark Winter. It said, let the games begin. Texas and Florida governor just stood up to Joe and Kamala Harris administration. And so good news out of Texas. I'm not sure about the Florida side of things, but with the Governor Abbott, they're talking about mandates and them not being something that people can enforce. So do you think there's going to be more states to stand up, and that could probably run the risk of the divided states of America, because we have some states that's very vocal and anti, you know, everything out of DC, but then we have state of Michigan, for example, where, you know, Whitmer plays along with it. So what are your thoughts on some states pushing back? Is it enough to get more momentum, more states going in that same direction, or what do you think?
Well, I very much hope so. Hope Republican governors stand up, and I greatly applaud what Texas has done, which they said any entity in the state of Texas is prohibited from issuing enforcing a vaccine mandate on their workers. And you know, and so then the president of Southwest Airlines was asked about this on CNBC, but he said, no, I'm not going to do what Texas says. I'm going to do what Biden says. You know, because we're a federal contractor, and so we feel that's what we need to do. But you're right. We're setting the stage for just direct conflicts between the power of the federal government and state governments. And state governments need to exercise their power because, of course, the 10th Amendment says that any power that's not specifically granted to the federal government by the Constitution is reserved for the states or for the people. And so the powers given to the federal government are supposed to be very narrow. And with these mandates that from Biden, it's a massive federal overreach. So states need to be standing up. And so I greatly applaud what the governor of Texas has done. And we need to see that more. What we really need is a new federalism. People say, well, we're just going to secede from the union. But of course, the federal government would never allow that. Mm-hmm. That's not going to happen. But what we need is really a new federalism where states start taking their power back, we need to restrict the power of the federal government as much as we possibly can, try to transfer as much power back to the states as we can, and then kind of try to insulate the freedom-loving states from the blue states and from the federal government as much as possible. And I hate to say that, but that's where we are as a country. And a lot of people now, I've been telling people openly, if you live in a tyrannical state that is pushing mandates, that is doing a lot of these horrible things, attacking your freedom, well, you literally may need to move to a state that respects freedom more. And I know that's not easy. I know that's not difficult. I know, people have jobs and people have roots in certain areas. But literally, we've gotten to a point where, and we've already seen so many people moving to red states, people in red states that didn't like the red states moving to blue states. I live in a state where we've just seen a massive influx of people driven up housing prices to absurd heights just because so many people want to live here because they're getting out of blue states. So I think we're a deeply divided country. I think this is where we're headed nationally. And I think that we, as people that love freedom, we're not going to fix the federal government right now. We're not going to have any sort of freedom revolution in the deep state in the federal government right now. And we need to realize that. So for now, we need to try to insulate ourselves in certain parts of the country and protect our freedoms in these areas the best that we can. Certainly not a perfect solution, but for right now, I think it's the most workable solution.
Yeah, I do agree. And then speaking of which, I want to touch on some of the global macro events is unfolding. So we have the whole Evergrande Asian crisis is unfolding with more developers over there, basically not able to repay their debt rather. So in your opinion, just looking at what's happening over there, is that something that eventually will, trickle its way over here, causing more issues here in regards to our economy here or what? What are your thoughts on the current issues we're facing and the possible crises that everybody's anticipating is coming next?
Well, certainly the global financial system is more interconnected today than ever. And so U.S. Investors, U.S. Institutions have exposure in China. So we want to monitor things in China closely. Now with China, I don't know that the Chinese government would let things get too far out of control there. They're talk about an authoritarian system over in China. So they'll probably not let things get too wildly out of control over there. I think if that situation in China was going to crash our markets, I think it probably would have happened already. But I do think that, the financial markets are highly vulnerable. And of course, the Federal Reserve has been trying to rig the system. The Federal Reserve has been pumping, buying bonds and trying to, and of course, the stock market loves when they buy bonds like crazy. And the Federal Reserve over the past couple of years during the pandemic has been more intervention than we've ever seen before. This has pushed the stock market prices to absurd heights. But for now, their rigging of the game essentially has worked and won't last forever. Eventually, they'll lose control when things get crazy enough. But for now, it's been working for them. And so I think they're happy about that. But the stock market's not going to keep going one way forever. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I believe that at some point, the Federal Reserve will lose control.
Yeah. And then so I want to basically now open up a little bit, get some questions. So feel free to ask some questions and I'll try to throw them out there. But here's a super chat I want to acknowledge here, but it's also like a question tied in there. Debt and Regret says, what's more important to you guys, referring to, I'm assuming the whole group, but, gold, silver, land, or crypto fiat? And so I'll throw that at you, Mike. What are your thoughts on the importance of those assets there. And also, what are your thoughts on the decentralized Bitcoin craze that everything is being centered around now? And does that have any connection with the CBDC? And was that all a part of the plan originally to get us towards that use of technology as the, you know, ultimate enslavement of humanity, in your opinion?
Well, that's a very good question. And I guess I'll talk about cryptos first. You know, we kind of see this situation where ultimately cryptocurrencies came out with the idea that we're going to use this as a real currency, mm-hmm. as a medium of exchange. You know, we're going to use it to trade with one another. And of course, what happened when people started to do that, like we saw up in the Northeast, they organized a community and they said, hey, we're going to have vending machines that accept Bitcoin. We're going to use it to as a real currency to trade with one another. Well, those people got raided by the federal government. They had an armored vehicle come in the side of their home, and they got into all kinds of trouble. Could the government crack down on that? Right now, the U.S. government's allowing it to be used basically at different cryptocurrencies as a collectible, as kind of an investment, if you will. But ultimately, people see the value of it as, because it's convertible into US dollars. So they're like, oh, my cryptocurrency went up in value. I can now exchange it for more dollars, which then I can go use and spend for things that I need. But ultimately, to me, if cryptocurrencies are going to be a real revolution and not just a collectible, mm-hmm. not just an investment, if there's going to be a revolution, they need to become a medium of exchange that is widely used as opposed to the U.S. dollar and other currencies. And right now I'm not really seeing that. Instead, I think it's more in the collectible realm. And then you've got countries around the world like China. China has basically come out and said, hey, we're pretty much going to ban Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. They kept cracking down. And now they pretty much just said, all right, we're not going to have this. And I think the rest of the governments around the world are watching that and saying, okay, if China gets away with it, well, maybe we'll pull the trigger at some point too. So personally, I'm not high on cryptocurrencies. I think there's people that have made a lot of money mm-hmm. on cryptos and crypto speculation. If you got in early and then you got out later and you made a lot of money and then you went and put that money into real assets and you made out like a bandit, good for you. But in the long term, I'm not high on cryptos myself. Now, gold and silver, I think, are more solid particularly for silver, I think is way undervalued right now. And you know, I think both will go up in price moving forward, especially as we get into more chaotic times. But then, you know, when things get really crazy, well, you can't eat gold and silver. So more important, people asked about land. If you're going to relocate and buy a piece of land, you should do it as soon as possible because time is running out for that. In fact, in a lot of desirable areas around the country, people are finding they're already priced out of the market. You know, some people have asked me, Michael, I want to move to such and such a place. Should I do that? Well, I'm like, well, you know, it would have been better to do it a couple of years ago when prices were half as much. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, land has gone up so much in desirable parts of the country in terms of places to relocate to. So that's a factor. But if you have money and you still want to relocate, I would do it as quickly as you could. And ultimately, I'm a big believer in prepping, stockpiling food, emergency supplies, everything you think you're going to need when things get really crazy out there. Because as we've seen, we've got shortages right now. You go to the store right now, there's certain things you can't get. There's other things that are very limited in supply. So already, if there's certain things you want to stockpile on, well, I'm sorry. In fact, one of the biggest emergency food, Augustin Farms, one of the biggest emergency food companies in the entire country, just said, we're shutting down for 3 months because we don't have the raw materials to make our emergency food right now.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at. So people say, you know, people used to say, oh, Michael, why are you working so hard to tell people to get prepared? Well, you have to get prepared in advance because then when things get crazy, all of a sudden you can't get things like Augustin Farms emergency food or whatever it is. So yeah, there's still some things out there you can go get, but now is the time to finish your preparations, because things are shortages are here, and they're going to get worse.
Yeah, good point there. I do agree. So here we have a question from Mr. Steve. Says, what role would gold and silver have in a universal basic income world?
That's a very interesting question. You know, I think there's a push for universal basic income. Certainly Democrats in Congress, many progressives would love to see that. It's been trialed in different communities here in the United States and around the world. And we've already seen, a move toward that with all these stimulus checks. Mm-hmm. And then we had the child tax credit. All of a sudden people with children were getting hundreds of dollars every month. And that's happening right now up to the end of the year, I think. I don't know if they're going to renew it or not. I think they want to, but we're starting to see that movement, and it's basically, but in order to fund that, governments have to borrow money that they don't already have. And so that creates more inflation, and that's where gold and silver come in. So the more inflation we have ultimately is going to be good for gold and silver. Their prices will go up. So gold and silver is a way to protect your assets in an environment of inflation and hyperinflation and money printing gone mad. So I think that's where we see the correlation there.
Yeah. So I'm curious. So feel free to ask a question, but I'm curious to get your thoughts on from this. I don't mind, going back to the spiritual side of things. Like I noticed a couple of comments earlier and just telling the truth about what's to come. It's not going to be pretty. It's not going to be pretty. It's going to be something that we haven't seen in our lifetime. But yet on the good side of that, share with us some positives of things that people here who might be watching, who are believers, how they can get involved in this fight, in particular when it comes to their faith and how to help out and further advance the kingdom of God during this time frame.
Yeah, ultimately, the time we're moving into, we're going to see immense persecution of Christians all over the globe. I write about that in Seven-Year Apocalypse, and the Bible talks about this. And we're seeing this, right? Because, hey, if you don't get the jab, you're being pushed to the fringes of society. If you don't embrace all the politically correct social agendas out there, you're being pushed to the fringes of society, you have some politically incorrect beliefs, you can't be the CEO of a corporation, and so we're seeing all this already. Other parts of the world, we're seeing Christians in North Korea being hauled off to concentration camps. We're in China, people are being hauled off the streets and taken to underground re-education facilities. And so we're seeing persecution on the rise all over the globe. But what this is ultimately going to do, whenever there's been persecution throughout history, it's purified believers. It's purified the body of Messiah, the body of Christ. And we're going to see that. And ultimately in the book of Revelation, it talks about a remnant in the last days, a remnant that will keep God's commandments and have the testimony of Jesus, and that will be pleasing to God. And ultimately, I believe that we're moving, and I talk about this in the book, I believe we're moving in the midst of all the chaos, all the darkness, all the crazy things that are going to happen. I believe we're going to see the greatest move of God the world has ever seen and the greatest harvest of souls the world has ever seen. So if you wanted to live at a monumental time in history, if you're a believer and you say, oh, I wish I could live during Bible times, well, I believe the times that we're moving into are going to literally be Bible times, and that God is going to use ordinary people, people like me, people like you, people in the underground church, people that are underground believers, to do absolutely extraordinary things. And as the world is shaken, what's going to happen is millions and millions and millions of people are going to want answers. And all of a sudden, the book of Revelation, Bible prophecy are going to become some of the hottest topics in the world, because almost everyone out there has some kind of concept in their head that, the Bible talks about the apocalypse. The Bible talks about things are going to get crazy, in the end times. And so they're going to be looking in the Bible. They're going to be looking for answers. And if me and you are there, and that's part of the reason why I wrote this book, that's part of the reason why I've written the last several books, is because I want to be there to help give people answers. I want to be there to help wake people up and provide answers to them. Mm-hmm. Because so many people, when the world goes crazy, people are going to be depressed. People are going to be curling up in a corner in a fetal position, crying. They're going to be, my life is over. My 401k is ruined. I lost my job. Things are going crazy. All the things I thought my life was going to be about, I'm losing them all. And so people, and even a lot of believers are going to be like that, because they don't understand the bigger picture. So I want to give people a reason why they can look forward to what's coming. I want to give people why they should be excited to be alive right now. I want people to understand, hey, you can line up with what God is doing and be part of the bigger picture, because all throughout human history, there's been a great battle between the forces of evil and the forces of good, between God and Satan, basically. And now this battle is coming to the big finale. You know, when you're watching a movie, everything leads up to the kind of the grand finale, you know?
Yeah.
That's the times we're living into. You get to be here for it. If God didn't think you could handle it, he wouldn't have put you here. But he did put you here for a reason. You're born for such a time as this. You can be part of the worldwide movement that's happening right now. I talk about this in the book. But in order to do that, you've got to totally change your mind, get out of the matrix, what the world tells you is important, and start focusing on what the Bible and what God says is important.
All right. Wow. Well, Michael Snyder, man, I appreciate you for coming and laying that out. And definitely, you know, it looks like, you know, not many questions, a lot of bickering amongst the community on concepts and parts of Revelation. So I'm gonna leave it at that. But I think this is ultimately a great door opener to get people talking about subject matter that really carries weight, you know, now and also for eternity. So I personally, as I dive more into understanding the scriptures for my own, you know, spiritual growth, it excites me because I do believe that we're all here for a certain reason. And this is the best time to be alive because we all get a part. We all got a part to play in this. And that's why I think, you know, the taboo subjects of the yesteryears, which was never talk about money, politics, or religion. Those three subjects are more open than ever to getting different people's perspective, because I want to be able to have those tough conversations just to, you know, get people to thinking outside the box, man. So I appreciate you joining us here. And I saw some people mention about the books. I'll show this on screen if I can. I mean, so this is where you can find the book. It's on Amazon, 7-Year Apocalypse. And as I mentioned, I, you know, have my copy. I got to finish it, but I got halfway through. But I enjoy being able to add more food for thought into my spiritual bank. So I appreciate you for what you do and all your writings. And as always, for those that might just be tuning in late, point them back to your directions and some of the blogs you write and how people can stay in tune with what you got going on.
Yeah, I'm afraid I cause controversy wherever I go. So, you know, it's just part of the thing. And like you said, I talk about religion, money, and politics. So I really get people stirred up. But like I said, people want to find my writing about the economy, go to theeconomiccollapseblog.com. I write about a wider variety of issues on endoftheamericandream.com. Or if you want to find all my articles in a single place and with a whole bunch of other news and tweets and videos and things that are going around on the world on a daily basis, kind of a Drudge Report format, you can go to themostimportantnews.com and you'll find that there. And then, of course, as you mentioned, my latest book, 7-Year Apocalypse, my previous books are all available right now on amazon.com.
All righty. Well, everybody, I appreciate you guys for plugging in with us and joining the chat and the discussion. So we'll definitely continue this on. But Michael, it's been great having you back on the show. Looking forward to having you back on down the line and see where we're at that point and have some more back and forth on what's really important, which is, of course, the spiritual essence of everything. So thank you for joining us on RTD once again. And then also for those that are plugged in, we'll connect again later on this evening. But other than that, Michael, hold on 1 second as I sign off with these guys here. I got to do it wrong. Still learning this stuff. But everybody, be blessed, be safe. I'll see you guys later.